Hello, this is Farah Yurduzu for Jerry Pippin Radio Show. And today I am in New York City, in Upper West Side, in a very high-rise building, visiting Nick Curto. Nick is a very dear friend of mine. In fact, he is one of the first friends that I met in New York City. Hi, Nick, how are you?
Hello there, Farah. It's so good to see you.
Nick is a very special person. He is the co-founder and co-director of the Disclosure Network New York City. It is a very unique UFO group. It's not only UFOs. They are doing many other meetings and investigations. So I would like to ask you, Nick, how did start everything?
Originally, I got involved because I was part of the PR team to get Dr. Stephen Greer a large audience when he came to New York approximately 4 years ago. And we succeeded in delivering a large amount of people to his one-night lecture, which was stirring and incredible. He had quite a large response. After it was over, the volunteers of the PR team were saying goodbye. And I said to them, wait a second, shouldn't be goodbye. It should be hello, because this is too important to stop now. We just started. And we should form a group and try to do more in the way of meetings, information for the public, and to educate ourselves on the questions that Stephen Greer and others are raising. And Hannah, one of the team, said, Nick, I just don't have the time to do this. Would you consider chairing this? And I thought about it and I said, I would if I can get some other volunteers to help me, and I did. So I started this this project. I asked Mary Jo at the time if she would help me. She was part of it, and she said yes. And that's how it began.
But before this, did you have any experiences related to UFOs, unidentified flying objects?
Farah, I had a very unusual experience, and it will not go away in my mind. It haunts me, perhaps is the right word for this. And when I was very young, perhaps 10 or 11, I lived in Massachusetts, Springfield, Massachusetts, with my folks and my sister. And every Sunday, it was our tradition to get in a car and go on a ride in the beautiful New England. And we were probably in Vermont or Maine at the time. And it was a typical Sunday afternoon. I remember it was in the summer. And we were riding, my sister and I in the back, of course, and my mother and father in the front of the car. And all of a sudden, it felt like an electric wave. It felt like a huge wave of energy passed from the front of the car to the back of the car. And I remember when it happened that my skin felt like 1,000 needles were piercing it. It was a hurtful, horrible thing. And I remember the wave happened a few more times. It was very quick. And I remember, the next thing I remember was that it was dark and we were going home and we weren't talking to each other.
Do you think that you experienced a missing time?
Yes, indeed. The whole afternoon was missing. I can't recall anything about the afternoon at all. And my sister and my mother and father never spoke about this ever.
After this strange event, did you check your clothes or your skin, your body? Did you see anything unusual?
Truthfully, Farah, I quickly did do that, and I didn't see or feel anything unusual, but I felt like I was recovering as if a huge electric wave had hit me hard. It felt like I was in a little bit of recovery.
Yes.
Mentally and physically.
This is very, very interesting. And after that experience, did anything else happen in your life related to...
Well, in my life, that's a different question. I've had a paranormal experience in that I had told by a doctor that I had severe a problem with my disc, a slip disc, and I have to go for major surgery. And until that date, which was a few days away, they said to go to my apartment and lie down on the wooden floor and to just try to relax. I was in tremendous pain. And I was lying there, and all of a sudden, I saw myself and my whole apartment from the top of the ceiling.
This is an astral projection, astral travel.
It was absolutely stunning. It happened quickly. Mm-hmm. And all I could think of was, how could I be up here and see a clear vision of my room and myself? Mm-hmm. It was mind-boggling. I thought, how am I staying up here? And just a second later, I was back down.
Yes, you had an astral projection. So now, if we go back again, what you are doing right now in Disclosure Network, New York City. Tell me about it, please.
Farah, I've always been interested in science. I've always been interested in space and in the probability that we've been visited many times in history by UFOs. Mm-hmm. I've always had an intense interest in that. And I love being in New York because I found so many people of like mind that I could talk with. And I think that it's a wonderful place to be and to have an organization like Disclosure Network New York, because each month we have a meeting and we either have a guest speaker or a town meeting where we simply talk about our own experiences, and it's been tremendous.
Do you have a website?
Yes, thank you for asking. That's very sweet of you. The website is www.dnny.org.
So everybody in New York City can come to your meetings, I guess. It is open to everybody.
It certainly is. And also we've gotten people from the West Coast and from Canada who are visiting the area, who've heard of us or who have seen our website and have telephoned and said, may we come to the meeting? And the answer is, everyone is welcome to discover and to learn more. So absolutely.
Is there an entrance fee?
We have $8 fee that will cover our rent. Thank you for asking. And for paying our bills, we sometimes have people who will want to show a DVD or videotape. And so we have a very large TV screen. And of course, that's a rental, things like that. So the money goes for that. In the case of Al Bielek, who was one of our prime speakers mm-hmm. for a wonderful session, we helped pay his expenses to travel to New York City mm-hmm. to be our special guest.
Except Al Bielek, what other speaker guests you had?
We've had some amazing people. From Colorado, Mark Kemmel flew here just to be with us and to talk about his perceptions of the future and what we should be thinking of and doing at preparing for what he feels is going to be a tremendously challenging future ahead of us all. Mm-hmm. We've had Robin Jorgensen. Robin Jorgensen is one of the most spiritual people I know, yet he's a construction foreman. That's what he does during the day, like any other person. But you know, I've talked to people of religious faiths, nuns and priests and so forth. To me, Robin Jorgensen is one of the most spiritual, true spiritual, wonderful people I've ever met. And he embraces the Urantia book. Mm-hmm. So he gave an in-depth, amazing lecture on the main principles of the Urantia book and how it really connects us to God and to each other as truly all children of one Father, God, and of spiritual beings in a cosmos where we have other brothers and sisters on other planets and other galaxies. That's part of what the Urantia book talks about and teaches. It was incredible. We also have had other speakers. Lynn Segala is certainly one of my heroes. She is a woman who was a physicist working on projects, highly sensitive projects, and because they were capable of being used for weaponry against other people, her moral code told her she must not help this anymore, so she left that. And she gave a stirring speech about that, also about 9/11 and all the information that we haven't learned yet and what we need to investigate to get to the truth of 9/11. We've had other people too. Bob Vanderklok talked on a variety of subjects. Francine Vale is a healer and talked about health and healing. That was amazing. And Jim Cameron is a filmmaker, and he's making a film. And actually, Al Bielek is one of the actors, interestingly enough, and he's relating some of his knowledge as part of the character of the film. Really, really interesting. One other memorable person was Thomas Sinisi, who is a Native American Indian, and he has a name of Hawk's Blood, and that's his Indian name, American Indian name, and he was talking about UFOs in Indian history and folklore.
This is extremely interesting. I'm very sorry that I missed that meeting.
We're definitely going to ask these people back, because once was certainly not enough for any one of them. They were tremendous, and they got a tremendous response. Interestingly enough, half of the meeting is the presentation. We break for a 10 or 15 minute relaxing break, and when we come back, we have questions and answers, so the audience can be truly a part of the presentation and interact with the speaker. And that has been challenging, wonderful, and it's been a tremendous source of knowledge for everyone, because when someone asks a question, it may, of course, be on the mind of many others, too. And the second half, it has just been one of the best parts of the meeting.
And I remember that Dr. Michael Sowler was one of your guests, too.
Amazing man. Certainly, we'd love to have him back if he can make it. He's got so much to say. He's so in-depth.
So what is your future plans for Disclosure Network New York?
Well, okay, a few things that are kind of interesting. We decided that we were an organization that wanted to reach out to more people, and we thought one of the ways of doing that was to make our own T-shirts and put Disclosure Network New York on one side and then our website and on the other. www.dnny.org, as I told you. And so we asked the group to vote on what they would want to put right under the name Disclosure Network New York. That would be kind of a catchphrase. And we had a lot of discussion about that. We had over maybe 15 or 20 different catchphrases that we'd like to, that people wanted to put underneath the words Disclosure Network, which will be on our T-shirts, on our stationery, eventually on our website. And this is what they voted on. Just two words. Question everything.
Question everything.
Question everything. I think that that says it all, as sweet and simply as possible. And everyone said that they loved it, and that is indeed what we've come up with and we're going to use.
Yes, you are very right, because when we talk about UFOs or alien existence in the cosmos or in our planet, there are so many questions. And yes, we are asking many, many questions to each other or to the investigators, to writers, to witnesses. But who is going to give the correct answers?
I think you have to go to the source. And the source would be investigators who are really working on this as their life work. Also, people who have been abducted. We have several in our group. And we have had a session where each of them has talked about their experience. And it has been riveting. You could have heard a pin drop. It was one of our best meetings. And we're going to have more on the subject, too. Some of the experiences are similar. Others are vastly different, such as mine. Mm-hmm. I haven't found anybody who's talked about waves of energy hitting their body and hurting them, at least not yet. Who knows? There may be someone out there who has a similar story. If there is, I certainly would like to hear it. Mm-hmm. We've had other people talking about childhood experiences or an adult experiences where time was lost, where they can't explain certain things. We've had one woman who will be giving a major lecture in next year for 2006, and she has had some incredible experiences with time displacement. She has literally, I'll give you one quick example. She was walking in New York, and she's lived here many, many years, and her family has lived here for generations. And there was a particular store that she liked and had gone to, but apparently it was torn down. It wasn't there. And she was walking with her friend recently, and she looked up, and she's the first thing she noticed was that the meters, the way you have to put money into a meter or something to park your car, looked very, very different. It was not like we normally see them. And she said to her girlfriend, "Why, look at that. That must be new, but it's just so weird looking." She then looked up and she saw a store. She said, "Oh, that's the store. I thought it had been torn down." She went in and went shopping with her girlfriend. And she did a regular shopping there. And then eventually she went home. And when she got home, one of the things she said to her mother was, "You know that wonderful store I went shopping in?" And told her mother a little bit about it. And her mother says, "Oh, you must be mistaken, dear. That was torn down a few years ago. It's not there anymore." And she said, "You don't understand. I was just there with my friend." She went back, and indeed, it wasn't there.
What about the things that she got from the store? Did she bring them to home?
Farah, that's an excellent question. I didn't ask her that, but she said, "Nick, it's as real as you standing looking at me. It was absolutely there." And yet, was it a time displacement? What happened? It wasn't just her. Her girlfriend had the same experience.
So it wasn't only one person, two persons.
Exactly, had two friends.
Experiences. Okay. And for Disclosure Network New York, are you planning to start a publication such as a monthly magazine or something, a fanzine?
What we've decided to do in lieu of that, Farah, is to expand our website. We're going to list the people who've already spoken to us and briefly what they talked about. We're going to put other interesting information on our website because we think we can get more people on the net to look at this and benefit from our experience. We've had interesting topics, by the way, at the meetings. For instance, we've had personal ET contact experiences. We had a wonderful presentation about crop circles, of course, complete with a lot of visuals on that.
Are they upcoming events or the events that you already had?
We have done these, and we will do parts 2 and 3 of these. So, again, this is such a vast subject that in many cases you must do more than one presentation on a particular subject. Others that were stirring were the 9/11 cover-up by our government. We had a panel discussion of people quite involved in the subject in New York City that was absolutely mind-boggling and raised many, many questions. Also Clifford Stone's work, we've had presentations on that, and Charles Hall. We could not get him because he doesn't live anywhere near New York City. So what we did in that case was run his DVD and have a discussion after which, and then we formed about 25 questions, and we've recently sent it to him, asking him if he will answer those questions on, say, a tape recording, and then send us back his answers.
Mm-hmm. Very good idea. It's a very good idea. And except UFO investigations, I know that you are into Urantia book, and you have been doing very serious work and investigations on this mysterious book. First of all, what is Urantia book?
The word Urantia, which is U-R-A-N-T-I-A, that's the spelling, means our planet Earth. And this book is specifically for us now on this planet, only this planet Earth. And it addresses what our knowledge is on various subjects, such as God, angels, life after death. It addresses the life of Jesus and who he really was, and the missing years of Jesus that are not in the Bible. In fact, there's only a few years that are reported in the Bible, but all the missing years, complete with what he was doing, where he was, are all part of that section of the book. That's part 4. The first section deals with the master universe, and it says that there are 7 super universes in a circle swirling around the center, which is where God, our Heavenly Father, resides. It's where time and space start. it gives an incredible description of that in depth. And it talks about us as spiritual beings that start here. We're born here. This is where our, they call it our spiritual, our cosmic career begins. And when we die, they say it's simply like walking through a door to the eternal life you're going to have, which is learning, uplifting, en route to God.
Who is the writer of Urantia book?
Excellent question. That answer, I'm going to give a brief one for you, but it's one of the most challenging stories that you'll ever hear. And it goes back to the early part of the last century, the 1910, perhaps 1920, when Victorianism was very focused on not UFOs especially, but on paranormal phenomenon. They dealt with Ouija boards and ghosts and things like that. And there were many, many charlatans. There was in a prominent doctor, and he lived in Chicago, and his purpose on that subject was to disclose who was the charlatans, because it bothered him so much that people were deceiving either single people or mass audiences and getting rich from it. So my point of the story is that he was known for sitting at a theater, and when something was flying through the air, he stood up once and cut the black string, and the whole thing fell and completely undermined the person who was saying that something was flying through the air that was extraterrestrial. So that's who he was. And a woman at the time there, she had a husband. They were an average couple in Chicago in the 20s. And her husband was slipping into deep trances and starting to say things that made absolutely no sense, as far as that he would never say those words or even deal with those subjects. And she was troubled by that. So being troubled by this factor that her husband was slipping into these trances that made no sense to her, there was an authority at the time called Dr. William Sadler. And he was a lecturer, he had written books, and he was the person that was debunking these people who were charlatans. And she contacted him and said, could he possibly come to their home and take a look at this experience that this man was having, and maybe investigate this? And he said, yes, I will. And he went there with a great deal of skepticism, like he always does. And the man did go into trances, and Dr. Sadler was absolutely fascinated with the fact that he seemed to be speaking as if a number of other beings were speaking through him. Dr. Sadler started asking questions, and through this man, these beings were speaking back the answers. And Sadler was impressed with the high quality of the answers. And obviously, this man hadn't even dealt with these subjects. He didn't even care about these subjects. So what was going on? Sadler went there for years, not for weeks or months, but for years. And this was going on. The woman said at one point, one of the beings that was going through this man said, you're asking, in some cases, such trivial questions, considering who you're speaking with. Well, Sadler took that as a challenge, mm-hmm. and said, you know what, I'm going to have some questions the next time we speak. He went back to he had a beautiful mansion in Chicago, and he used to have every Sunday, a group of people, doctors, lawyers, theologians, would come and have a social afternoon. And they would discuss the topics of the day. So Sadler went back and told them of what was happening, but asked them if they would keep it secret, which they all agreed to do. And he said, I'd like to come up with some questions to ask the next time I'm with what he termed the sleeping subject. He never disclosed the name of that person, because later on, the beings that were going through this person said it wasn't important who the person was, because it really wasn't his knowledge, that the knowledge would stand on its own. Mm-hmm. And so the sleeping subject should remain anonymous, and Sadler agreed to that. So anyhow, Sadler got a lot of questions like, is there really a God? Where in the universe are we exactly? Who was Adam and Eve, and are there really angels? What happens when you die? Do you live again? And if so, what's it like? Are there other beings on other planets? All of these incredible questions. And this was, again, in perhaps the late 20s, early 30s. This is very advanced. So he went back and asked these questions. And the answers staggered Dr. William Sadler because of their amazing in-depth quality. He went back and told the group again on the Sundays what the answers were, and of course that just made them want to ask more questions because they were fascinated with what was going on. The group in the Dr. Sadler's living room became known to themselves as a group that would only deal with these questions, and it was very close. They didn't even tell their children what they were doing. This would make a tremendous movie, because if you can imagine at the time the way the technology was, and yet they were dealing with this cutting-edge process. The questions went on, and now the questions became papers, a paper on the cosmos, another paper on life after death. So these papers were eventually compiled, and that is what the Urantia book is made up of. It's the papers that answer the questions. Mm-hmm. And the Urantia book itself is 2,096 pages. Some people, when they start to read it, including me, it's like potato chips. Once you start, it's so fascinating. You'll jump from section to section. You'll think, oh, I got to look at the table of contents to see what they say about Noah, the story of Noah. Was that true or false, or what parts of it were true? It goes on and on. And so I met one person that read the whole book in 6 weeks. He said, I could not stop reading this book. Oh, that's common. It's that kind of a fascinating book.
Is there any questions, answers, or information about extraterrestrial intelligent life?
Absolutely. The book is filled with it. Mm-hmm. They use the words transports. Mm-hmm. They use the words friction shields on certain beings. They say that they're not wings, they're friction shields, and they're used to go many light years in space. They talk about different beings who have landed on our planet before, some of which are reflected in our history right now. Mm-hmm. Only they give a more in-depth account of who they were and what they were talking about. So if you like world history, this is huge for you to see and to read and to understand. The chapters on that are amazing. It talks about how patterns of how man went from one continent to the other, how the different races were getting past certain continents, going to other places, and intermixing, intermarrying, and forming new races. It talks about, it's a fascinating subject. It talks about how our great world religions came to be, and how the ideas of that spread. It is. If you had to take one book, if you were going somewhere and you had to take one book for the rest of your life, and you had to choose one book to take with you, there's certainly only one book I would choose, and it's the Urantia book.
There is a classical question. If you go to a deserted island, what 3 things you take with you? So you know what to take with you if you go to an island.
Absolutely, and a couple of good pairs of glasses. what they just came out with, too, is the MP3, which is a way of taking a great deal of information, such as a book, mm-hmm. and transporting it to CDs. Mm-hmm. And they have put the entire book now on an MP3 discs. And there's 7 of them. Isn't that interesting? 7 discs that look like CDs, mm-hmm. And they can be played in an MP3 player, and you can listen to different readers reading the entire text, mm-hmm. of the Urantia book. And you get, I feel, a lot of wonderful feeling of the words, and because they're really Urantia book readers themselves, you get another level of understanding as they expressly read the book. And I just bought the series. I think it's $25 for the entire 7 discs that anyone can buy and then play. The MP3 players can be bought for under $50. Mm-hmm. So for anyone who just wants to listen, or if there's any blind people that would like to dig into this book, it's a wonderful way now to explore the book.
As far as I know, Urantia book was translated into different languages. What languages?
Yes, yes, and there's an ongoing effort to translate them into all the world's great languages. Spanish, Finnish, Russian, let me see what else. There's a Korean version I saw that is tremendous. That was a lot of work to translate it to that. Let me see, French, did I say French? And there's a few others that don't come to mind. And there's an ongoing, like I said, effort to translate it to all the great world religions in the next years to come. And interestingly enough, some countries are already really responding to this. South America, for instance, is responding to the Urantia book. Finland is responding to this. America is to some degree already. It was actually downloaded, if you want to use those words, here in America, in Chicago, in the 20s. It was published in 1955. So this year marks the 50th anniversary of the publishing of the Urantia book. It was actually, the date was October 12th. And a group of us went to the Today program, mm-hmm. and we had made up T-shirts that said the word Urantia book, with the three azure blue circles on a white background, which is the symbol of Urantia. Mm-hmm. And we went to the Today program, and the camera passed on us, I think, about four different times. And people from different parts of the country called and said, we saw it. So we were kind of happy that they saw that.
So in New York City, is there a Urantia Book Center? Are there meetings? Are there conferences?
All of that, Farah. We had an amazing conference this past summer in August, right outside of Philadelphia. And it was a major college, Catholic college, and there were several hundred people there. And we had lectures. Amazing people were speaking, and we had a celebration of the 50th anniversary of the Urantia book. The other part of your question, every Tuesday night in Soho on Spring Street, we have a group of people that sit from 8 o'clock to 10 o'clock, 2 hours, and read from the Urantia book and then discuss it in detail. And some of the readers have been reading for 25 years. There are people who just found the book. So it's a wide variety of people. From many different backgrounds. You know, there are African Americans, there are people from the Jewish backgrounds, Catholic, Christian, atheists who have discovered the Urantia book. Many different types of people are exploring this book together, and it's actually an exciting adventure. It's one of the most exciting things I can think of doing, would be to, on Tuesday nights from 8 to 10, to go to Spring Street and study the Urantia book. By the way, that's open to anyone, and there's no fee of any kind.
You know what? You and I, we met because of Urantia book.
Did we?
Yes, because it was Expo Life Fair, and you had a table with Urantia book with one of your friends, and I saw the book because I knew the book when I was in Turkey.
Okay.
So I was very excited seeing that book, so we started to talk, and then we became friends.
Oh, wow. Farah, you've got a wonderful memory, and I do recall it now. Interestingly enough, when I got out of college and came to New York City to start my career in the design field, I wanted to explore the great world religions. I really wanted to expand myself, and I did that by going to one way to do that was to go to the Unitarian services, which read from many, many different sources of books. When each Sunday, the Torah, various books, and I had been going there for approximately 2 years, and it was a wonderful, enriching experience to learn about various religions and their writings. And one Sunday morning, about 2 years into going, The person up on the altar, if you would call it that, said, "And now we're going to read from the Urantia book." And I thought, maybe that's an Eastern Indian name. I had no idea what the word Urantia meant. And he started reading from this book. He read two or three paragraphs. I was stunned. I absolutely was wiped away. It was every word, the way it was constructed, what it was saying, it was just saying to me, this is the book that you've been looking for. It exists, and you're hearing it. That's how I felt about it. I remember thinking, this is the most thrilling morning of my life, and I wanted to explore this new book called Urantia. And I went to a health expo, New Life Expo, in New York City, and this would have to be about 15 years ago, and it was a few months after I had heard about the Urantia book, and there was this big sign on the wall way in the back of the room that said Urantia book, and I thought, this is my opportunity. So I went like a heat-seeking missile directly to that booth, and there were a lot of other booths beckoning you to stop, but I really went to that one first, and I met a couple of people at the table, and I said, I really would like to know more about this book. And they said, you know, interesting timing, we'd love to tell you about it, but we're going to the main auditorium because we have, during the course of this weekend, 1 hour on stage to talk about this book, and it's coming up in 5 minutes. We're going there to do a presentation. Why don't you come and listen to the presentation, and then please do come back and we'll discuss whatever you'd like. So I thought, well, that makes sense. So I went in the room, and I sat in almost the back of the room because I thought, if this isn't something that is interesting to me, I can slip out. So I did do that. They started talking very matter-of-fact, very down-to-earth about the book and how it was affecting their lives and what was involved in the book. And I listened to it, and I found myself getting up and quietly moving to the very front row of the auditorium because I literally didn't want to miss a word. They were connecting with me. I think that's the key word here. I was being connected to information and material that I have always wanted to find out about. And the material, interestingly enough, was connecting me to God, to the universe, to my cosmic family, and to my fellow man and women. It was connecting me as a spiritual being to other spiritual beings, and we all have one Father. And it made total sense.
I'm sure you feel yourself very happy and lucky for being able to sense this, feel this.
Blessed, absolutely blessed. It was like looking for a needle in a haystack for many years, and suddenly you're getting tapped on the shoulder and saying, good that you started that journey. Now here's your reward. Go for it. That's how I felt.
So your spiritual journey started probably when you were 10 years old, when you had your first UFO encounter, that strange event. And after that, you found the correct doors to open and go inside. So what are you planning from now on in your spiritual path, in your spiritual journey?
Certainly the Urantia book has been a tremendous guide. It has been a tremendous journey. I feel as though I'm at the right place at the right time, reading the right book, and being with the right people. That's a huge, huge thing, because I feel blessed. A lot of people go through life and never find that. They're looking, but they don't find that. And I found it. It resonates to me, totally resonates to me. It sharpens my focus. It's a tremendous tool. The Urantia book is not meant to be worshipped. It's not like that. It's simply a book of facts, a book of guidance to say you need to know this to go further in your spiritual journey and in your journey in life. It's giving you all the ingredients that you need to do a better job of living and to not be afraid of dying and to know that there's so much more ahead.
Thank you very much for this very interesting interview, and I wish you all the success for the future projects.
Sarah, it's been a joy to see.